It is your Thursday drive. Don't forget Raiders and Niners coming up. Pregame starts at 4:45 here on KSRO. Joining us right now, and this is a true honor, he has not been with us before, and it's a pleasure to have him with us. He is Giants Hall of Fame broadcaster John Miller. John, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well, and I'm certainly very sad about the loss of Willie McCovey, and yep. And of course, just a week before, Hank Greenwald, the great voice of the Giants, also passed away. So, yeah, been a hard week for Giants fans, at least Giants fans of a certain age.
Well, yeah, we had C.W. Nevious on with us. He's with us just about every week, and we talked about Hank Greenwald. What a great broadcaster for the Giants, as you are. I grew up in Detroit, listening to Hall of Famers, on the radio and TV all the time, and you're one of my favorites. You're an iconic broadcaster, Hall of Famer, Ford C. Frick Award, and it's just great to talk to you. Ernie Harwell and George Kell were my heroes before I got into radio many, many years ago.
Well, I appreciate it, and I grew up here in the Bay Area, and I grew up with the Giants as my team, and
yeah,
the Giants had great players in those days, especially Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Orlando Cepeda,
sure,
Juan Marichal, Gaylord Perry, all Hall of Famers, and the first year I ever saw a game was 1962 in person. My dad and my godfather took me to a game at Candlestick Park, and Willie Mays hit a home run, and these were such great players, you couldn't help but become a baseball fan, much less a Giants fan.
Right.
And McCovey burst upon the scene in a huge way. He had one of the great major league debuts of any hitter in the history of the game. He had a four-hit game in his major league debut, and two triples and a couple of doubles. And McCovey only played, I think, 54 games or 52 games, whatever it was, that year. It was already well into the summer before the Giants brought him up. And yet he was so great that he still won the Rookie of the Year award, and he won it easily. The whoever finished second, it wasn't even close. McCovey hit .354 as a rookie in 1959.
Whoa!
So wow. he was a San Francisco Giant, and Willie Mays was maybe one of the greatest players of all time in the history of the game. But he came with a team from New York, and,
right,
and San Francisco Giants fans, it took a while to warm up to Willie Mays. But I think the funny thing is, here's Willie McCovey in the Hall of Fame. His numbers speak for themselves, an MVP, a Rookie of the Year, an All-Star Game MVP, 1969 All-Star Game, when it was at RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And yet I always thought he was underappreciated. And part of that was because, of course, he played on the same team with Willie Mays. So just about everybody was underappreciated when they were too close to Willie Mays because he was just that good. But
right,
also, when he came up, Orlando Cepeda was on the team. He was a first baseman, and he had been the Rookie of the year before. And he was a future MVP a couple of times in the National League on his way to the Hall of Fame. So there's McCovey, who came up as a first baseman. And they had two great first basemen at the same time. So a lot of times McCovey had a hard time getting in the lineup. And sometimes when he played but as a left fielder, which was really out of position for him.
Right.
So I think that McCovey could have had much better numbers. It's just that the Giants kept producing so many great players at that time. But, talking about McCovey maybe losing a little bit in the glare, the bright glare of the greatness of Willie Mays. One of the great treats coming to the Giants as a broadcaster was that oftentimes I would see Mays, McCovey, Cepeda, these Giants Hall of Famers down in the clubhouse, Mike Murphy's office before a game. And one day I walked in and McCovey, Mays, and Cepeda were all sitting in there. And as a kid, I remembered so many about these guys. So I'm asking them all these different questions about things that happened. And I'm asking them about, well, who was a better left fielder? Because they tried Cepeda out there. They tried McCovey out there to get both of their bats in the lineup. And Mays said, that, and by the way, they were both too polite to answer that question. But Mays said, hey, McCovey was not too bad out there. And when Marichal pitched his no-hitter in 63, which was the first no-hitter by a San Francisco Giant,
wow,
he said McCovey saved the no-hitter with a leaping catch in the ninth inning, robbing a guy of a home run. And he said McCovey was the only guy on the team that could have caught the ball, because all the other left fielders they had were not tall enough. McCovey was 6 feet four, and he was a good leaper, and he went up and he brought that ball right back into the ballpark. So, and I kind of looked at McCovey, who was, you know, as great a player as he was still kind of soft-spoken, and he was a guy who did not toot his own horn.
Right.
But you could see that he was getting a kick out of the great Willie Mays bragging about him and something, some great thing that he did, knowing that this was certainly a story I was going to tell on the air. But one of the things I will never forget about McCovey, because we all saw him hit so many home runs, he was a great clutch hitter, was in 1962, the Giants went to the World Series for the first time as the San Francisco Giants.
Right.
And in the last of the ninth inning of Game 7, the Giants are trailing 1-0. And with two down, Matty Alou's at first base. Willie Mays hits a double into the right field corner to put runners at second and third. And that brought up Willie McCovey. Now, the Yankees could have walked McCovey intentionally with Cepeda on deck. And finally, I guess Ralph Terry, the pitcher, Ralph Houck, the manager, went out to talk to him, asked him what he wanted to do. He said, well, I better just pitch to McCovey because either way, I'm in bad shape. At least maybe I could. If I end up walking him, I still can go after McCovey with a fresh count. So anyway, McCovey stepped in, and he ended up hitting a laser beam, a shot. He said afterward it may have been the hardest hit ball of his career.
Wow.
And at first he hit it so hard he thought, I've got the base hit, and we're going to win this game and win the World Series. But Bobby Richardson, the Yankees' gold glove second baseman, made a quick move to his left, reached up above his shoulders, and caught the ball. And that was it. The World Series was over. One of the great disappointments of McCovey's career. And yet, he hit the ball so hard. What more could he have done? That's all you could hope for when you go to the plate in a big spot, is that you just square it up and you hit it really hard. But one of the things that always lingered about that play, and it was such a tough break for the Giants and such a disappointment that they came so close to winning it. He came so close to getting the game winning World Series hit for a World Series championship. A little while later, Charles Schultz from up there in the Redwood Empire,
yeah,
in his Peanuts cartoon, he published a cartoon where Charlie Brown and Linus are sort of sitting on the curb for three panels, looking kind of glum, and their chins are in their hands, and finally Charlie Brown jumps up and shouts, "Why couldn't McCovey have just hit it 3 feet higher?" And so a little over a month later, another cartoon, it's the same thing. Three panels, Charlie Brown and Linus looking kind of glum and sad. And then Charlie Brown jumps up and shouts, or even, why couldn't McCovey have hit it 2 feet higher? And so it went. So that kind of memorialized and made forever famous that play. But McCovey himself always talked about it for years and years, decades afterward, about how that was one of the great disappointments of his career. But in 1986, when he went into the Hall of Fame, he was asked by a writer, he says, hey, when people say, how do you want to be remembered, what do you tell them? And McCovey, without hesitation, showing his dry sense of humor, he said, I tell them, I'd like to be remembered as the guy who hit it over Bobby Richardson's head.
Now, the Chronicle had a headline saying the Giants great has been remembered as a Hall of Fame human being. He really was apparently really just a sweetheart of a guy and a great human.
Well, he truly was, And he just loved the Giants. He not just loved the game, but he loved the Giants. And, you know, these last few years, very sadly, he's had so many physical problems. And yet he just would not allow that to keep him away from the ballpark. And he went through hell to get to a game. And he came to almost every game. He could have just stayed at home and watched them on TV.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot simpler. But, you know, he was in a wheelchair. He had to have help and a special kind of a conveyance to get him from his house to the ballpark. And yet there he was night after night and just enjoying it and studying the game and the players. And he was often in the clubhouse before the game.
Yeah.
And players would come to him and they would find out very in short order that he studied their game, and so they would ask him, "What are you, I'm having a hard time with this. I'm struggling with that. Do you have any suggestions?" And if he was asked, then he would tell them what he thought, and it was always a good kind of a bit of advice. So he was a great reference and a great resource for the current Giants right up to this day.
Yeah, and they of course they have the Willie Mack award, which they honor players each year, and well deserved. And of course, don't forget McCovey Cove at AT&T.
Well, I think that was an easy one to come up with the McCovey Cove idea, because as soon as they saw where the ballpark was located, they thought, "Man, McCovey would have hit so many balls into the water out there."
Yeah, yeah.
And so, how about McCovey Cove? So, I think the when Barry Bonds passed Hank Aaron to move into first place on the all-time home run list in the history of the game, I was on the air on the Giants radio at the time that he hit the home run, and I recall there was a rookie left-hander on the mound, Mike Bacsik, and the count went to 3-2, and I just remember thinking, at this time, this place, with this pitcher, I think he's going to go after him to try to get him out.
Right.
And he's not in a pennant race or anything like that. And this could be the moment that Bonds hits this home run to break the record. So I wanted to get the names of Mays and McCovey on the broadcast attached to it. And as fate would have it, I talked about the excitement here at 24 Willie Mays Plaza, which is the address of the ballpark,
right.
And an armada of maritime craft out there behind right field in McCovey Cove, and then the pitch came in and boom, he hit it, and I was kind of happy about that, to get their names in there, because that was kind of a Giants thing. You know, some of the greatest home run hitters in the history of the game have all played for the Giants, and
I remember that McCovey broadcast
on that list and Bonds. Anyway, Willie McCovey, one of the best there ever was. The other thing that really kind of stands out for me about McCovey, a game I saw in person, 1970, I believe it was, second game of a doubleheader, and they had been redoing Candlestick Park, turning it into 49ers Stadium, and they had put in artificial turf. And Mays got on first base with two down in the first inning, and a nothing-nothing game, and McCovey came up, and they went into the big shift that they employed for McCovey, and he bunted on the third base side. And it was a bunt, and Mays scored from first on a bunt.
Whoa!
And McCovey ended up at second with a double, a bunt double with an RBI by Willie McCovey. And I'll never forget that, because it was so unexpected and so spectacular, and the crowd just went nuts. Well, I always remember that. I've told the story many times on the air. And yesterday, looking up some things about McCovey, after learning that he had passed away. And Russ Hodges, the great broadcaster of the Giants, back when I was a kid, a Hall of Famer, he and Lon Simmons, he always used to say they'd go into all these different ballparks, and in every park somebody would point to a certain spot and say, "That's where McCovey once hit a home run," which is the longest in the history of this ballpark. And the longest home run in the history of the previous Busch Stadium in St. Louis, you know, they've opened a new one now in the last few years,
right.
Was hit by McCovey the first year that ballpark opened, over the scoreboard in right center field into the upper deck. And Mike Shannon was in right field that day, and he's been a broadcaster now for the Cardinals for many, many years. And to this day, he says it's the longest home run he has ever seen hit. So I looked up that game to get a little more info about that home run at Busch Stadium, and because they still talk about it in St. Louis, not just Mike Shannon, to this day. And earlier in that same game, McCovey came up in the first inning and for a hit. And there you have it. So that was the quote from McCovey afterward, that for him, the most memorable thing that day was probably going to be the bunt and not the booming home run.
Yeah, right. John Miller's with us. We got to ask you, my producer Mike just showed me a photo of you on KFTY Channel 50 in Santa Rosa. You started up here?
Well, yeah, that was my first full-time job in broadcasting.
Wow.
I've done some other things in broadcasting before that, but Channel 50, Stan Atkinson, who had been an anchor man at Channel 2 in the Bay Area and down at NBC and in Burbank, he came up there with some other guys from NBC, and
yeah,
they decided to put a station on, and they had a nightly newscast, and they hired me to be the sportscaster. So I was 20 years old, and I was up there in Santa Rosa. And I actually was on KSRO a few times. There was a guy named Jim Grady in those days.
The great Jim Grady. I call him my illegitimate father. Yeah. What a guy.
Yeah. Seamus O'Grady.
Seamus O'Grady, indeed.
Yeah.
In fact,
we were doing the same football games and whatnot. They were on KSRO radio, and we'd be doing it on Channel 50, high school and
right,
junior college and whatnot. So
new studio that they just built for us, John, is titled officially the KSRO Jim Grady Studio.
Oh, cool! All right.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor to talk to you. We actually met in the press box a few years ago when my producer and I were at the Giants game. And it's just great to talk to a Hall of Fame broadcaster. Mr. John Miller, thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, my pleasure. All the best. Thank you.
All right, you too.